Good morning, members. I'll call this virtual meeting of State Government Finance and Elections Committee to order for today, April 6th, 2021. And pursuant to House Rule 10.01, this meeting is being held virtually. Representative Elkins, did you get a chance to look at the minutes? Wait a second, I gotta do the roll call. Brett, can you take the roll?
Chair Nelson?
I'm here.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Carlson present.
Representative Nash?
Good morning.
Representative Bonner?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski?
Present.
Representative Elkins?
Present.
Representative Greenman?
Present.
Representative Cleburne?
Present.
Representative Kosnick?
Present.
Representative Mason? Representative New Brindley?
Present.
Representative Pulaski?
Pulaski present.
Representative Quam?
Present.
A quorum is present.
Thank you, Ms. Spreck. Now, Representative Elkins, did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have them open in front of me, and I'm pleased to move the minutes of March 25th meeting for approval.
The minutes have been moved for the previous meeting. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes are approved. The first order of business today is we have the final, I believe it's the final governor's appointment to the Campaign Finance and Disclosure Board. Mr. Sigurdsson, if you want to introduce yourself, then you can introduce the appointee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, committee members. My name is Jeff Sigurdsson. I'm the executive director of the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. Since we were back here just about a month ago looking at other appointments to the board, I'll just briefly remind you that the board is an independent agency. The governor's office includes our agency in the governor's overall budget, but we do not report to the governor's office. As the chair stated, the initial appointments to the board are made by the governor. The board consists of six members, no more of half of which can be with any particular party. Two members must be former members of the legislature, again, representing different political parties. The committee previously held the heard the appointments of Peggy Lepick, Carol Flynn, Steve Swanson, and Ferris Rashid. Mr. Soule is here as the fifth of the six confirmations that you'll be hearing this year. So five of the six members are before you and before the Senate as well. Although this doesn't apply to this particular appointment, the other appointments have to be confirmed within 45 days of when they were appointed by a three-fifths vote of both the House and the Senate. I will remind members that without at least four members, board members, the board cannot hold a meeting. Therefore, it's impossible for the board to go forward and finish either an investigation or start an investigation if a complaint is filed with it. Staff can do administrative duties, but the investigative authority of the board does rest with the board members. Thank you.
And with that, I'll move the appointment of George Soule. And Representative Pulaski, you have your hand up. Do you have a question or? You're muted, sir.
Mr. Chair, I don't see my hand up, but.
I'm sorry. That was my cursor there. It looked like a hand up. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
Mr. Soule, if you want to introduce yourself and proceed with, then we'll get to questions. Mr. Soule.
Thank you, Chair Nelson and committee members. My name is George Soule. I live in Minneapolis. I was raised in Becker and Clay counties. My mother grew up on the White Earth Reservation, and I am a member of the White Earth Nation. I graduated Morehead State, and I went to law school. I returned to Minneapolis almost 42 years ago, where I've been a lawyer during that entire period of time. I'm a civil litigation lawyer. That means I mostly defend lawsuits brought against my clients. And I've tried cases in Minnesota and in 18 other states. I also serve as a tribal court judge on the courts of appeals for four tribes in Minnesota, including my own, the White Earth Nation. I was a nerd growing up, and I liked politics. I guess that's the definition of nerd. And so I got involved in politics really when I was in high school in Moorhead, and I've been involved in campaigns for 50 years. When I returned from law school in 1980, I became the Minnesota coordinator of the John Anderson for President campaign. Those of you who are old enough to remember that, recall that he started as a Republican candidate for president and then ran as an independent in the general election. I've also worked on my wife's campaigns. She was a politician in the city of Minneapolis, served on the city council, and ran for mayor in 2001. For the last 25 years, though, I've focused more on judicial campaigns. I've helped judges who are running for election run their campaigns, and I've chaired a number of campaigns, including for Supreme Court judges. They're listed on my resume. I've also served as treasurer for two campaigns, neither of which are under the purview of the Campaign Finance Board. One was a federal campaign for Congress in 2006, and the other was for city council in the city of Minneapolis, but I do have experience as a campaign treasurer. I consider myself an independent. I used to be a partisan. I'm far less so as I've grown older, and I would take a nonpartisan approach to the issues that come before the board. I would apply the law to the facts that are revealed during the investigations and try to be fair and impartial and empathetic and considerate of people who make innocent mistakes who aren't professionals in this business. So I would apply kind of the nonpartisan approach that I used as chair of the Commission on Judicial Selection under Governor Ventura and as a tribal court judge to address the matters that come before the board. And I would be happy to answer any questions that you have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And just I thought I moved it, but I'll move the appointment of George Soule to the Minnesota Campaign and Finance Board. Members, any questions? It's a quiet bunch this morning. If there are no questions, I will move to recommend the confirmation of George Soule to the appointment of the Minnesota Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. Ms. Sprecht, do you want to take the roll?
Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Carlson, aye.
Representative Nash?
Nash votes aye.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Greenman?
Aye.
Representative Cleborn?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative New Brindley?
Aye.
Representative Pulowski?
Pulowski, aye.
Representative Quam? Representative Quam? With a vote of 12 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails.
Motion prevails. Congratulations, Mr. Soule. You're on your way to confirmation.
Well, thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members.
With that, members, the next order of business we have is the walkthrough of the DE amendment for House File 1952, which will be our state government finance omnibus finance bill. Members, I will hand it over to Mr. Gehring to walk us through the amendment, and we can have some questions, and Ms. Roberts can give us the financial analyst of it. Analysis of it also. Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Roberts, I think we'll probably go first because the first article of the DE amendment is the appropriations article.
Okay, Mr. Gehring. Ms. Roberts.
Members, can you hear me okay?
You're a little quiet.
Okay. I'm going to share my screen. I'll try to speak up.
So what I'm going to walk you through is the change item spreadsheet for the DE amendment. Typically, we would walk through the more detailed spreadsheet, and I know members have it available to them if they have any questions, but given that we're doing this in a Zoom environment, I thought this would probably work better. So what this spreadsheet is going to show is all of the change items from base, and this shaded column, the yellow column, shows the difference between the House DE amendment and the governor's recommendations. So the first change items are for the legislature. There you can see the House operating adjustment. This is the amount that I believe will be presented in the Rules Committee later today. Several change items for the LCC. The first is operating adjustments that were, I understand, calculated in the same way that the House and likely the state agencies also did to look to cover increases, known increases, insurance, and those sorts of things. There's an increase of $377,000 for the legislative auditor staff, so that's an increase in staff. A base adjustment for the legislative budget office because they were facing a base reduction coming into the next biennium. There is funding of $370,000 for a diversity and inclusion officer to serve the entire legislature. And then one-time funding for an accessibility vendor to assist the legislature in looking at all of the information they post online and making that accessible. And then finally, you'll see, and actually there should be a difference column here. The governor had recommended transferring the single audit responsibilities from the OLA to Minnesota Management and Budget. And the governor had also recommended a decrease to the OLA. The House Bill DE2 does transfer those functions, but does not cut the OLA's funding. So I apologize, there should be a change showing here in the yellow column. And then the final change in the legislature's budget is the DE does a one-time cancellation of $5 million from the Senate carry forward account. Moving on to the state auditor, you can see all of the requested change items were funded largely at the requested level, with the exception of the school finance accountability team, which was funded at a lower level than the governor of $229,000. So a total of $3 million increase for the state auditor. Moving down to the attorney general, again, you'll see listed the various change items you've heard about. And again, the funding is slightly below the governor's and the AG's request of $500,000 less. But the total increase in funding would be $11.8 million. For the Secretary of State's office, the total increase is $1.85 million. This includes the requested change items for the office and then two member initiatives. First, $48,000 in one-time funding for House File 158. That was the voting instructions in non-English languages. And then $500,000 in one-time funding for bilingual grants for bilingual election judges, and that was Representative Claiborne's bill. As I go through this, I'm going to just go quickly through. You'll see for most of the small agencies, the only change item they have is a operating adjustment. These percentages will vary a little bit, but the methodology used by MMB to calculate these was standard, looking at existing staff costs within the payroll system, known healthcare insurance increases, rent increases, and IT increases. You may see some, I'll point out, for example, in the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board, there's actually a bigger adjustment in the first year, and that's because of a known retirement of a longtime employee with that small agency. And finally, on this page at the bottom is the $4.4 million for the minute services changes. That includes an operating adjustment, but also the Blue Ribbon Council recommendations. And in minute, you'll see the first of a negative number in the fiscal year 21 column. And that was due to the administrative holdbacks that the governor and MMB announced earlier when COVID first started. And so those are that are reflected as negative spending in fiscal year 21. Oh, and I noticed I should jump up to the Secretary of State's office, also a fiscal year 21 change. Additional HABA funding of $29,000 from the Special Revenue Fund. And that is because there is language in this bill creating a statutory appropriation of the HABA funds. And please let me know if I'm going too slow or too fast. Moving on to the next page, just you'll see at the top, there's some language in the bill dealing with the minute cash flow assistance. This is something they've asked for the last several budget cycles. For Department of Administration, the total change is $4.5 million for the biennium. This includes the requested change items, including a request to the an increase to the in lieu of rent, an operating adjustment, funding dealing with improving equity and grants management and equity and procurement. And then there are two member initiatives funded. The first is $500,000. This is one-time funding for sensory accessibility grants. This was Representative Freiberg's bill. And then in the second year, increase from Representative Frazier's bill, an increase in the AMPRS grants. Moving on, for Minnesota Management and Budget, the increase for fiscal year 22-23 is $4.1 million. You can see here in the fiscal year 21 column, again, that they have a negative operating adjustment, negative expenditures or a reduction in fiscal year 21. And then you'll also see there's a new open general fund change item. This is where you see the funding for the transfer of the single audit responsibilities from the legislative auditor to the to Minnesota Management and Budget. Next is Department of Revenue, which is the largest general fund agency in this committee. And so their increase for the 22-23 biennium is $9.3 million, but they also do have an $8.3 million reduction in fiscal year 21. So this change is from both the operating adjustment and then an increase to the base for the volunteer income tax assistance grants. The next several items are all the operating adjustments for the small agencies, and these are all funded at the governor's level. So I won't go through them one by one because I think the numbers are all pretty clear. The Historical Society is larger just because of the nature of their general fund base is larger. So again, walking through to the next, the last sheet, again, you'll see the small agency adjustments. And then finally, some changes for the Gambling Control Board. These are all from the Special Revenue Fund, not from the general fund, but increases for staffing, rent, travel, employee development, and then creating and maintaining an information system. And finally, I'll walk you through the general fund reconciliation. Total changes in expenditures are $43.1 million. And then you'll see the $2.5 million is from the open general fund for the single audit. So a total of $45.56 million. And then we do have revenue changes that we also count in our against our target or for our target. And when you see a revenue, if it's a positive number, that's a gain to the general fund. So you'll see the carry forward cancellation for the Senate of $5 million. There's a loss in revenue for the Capitol Complex parking fund shortfall, and then $1 million from the MMB payment plus vendor rebates. And then there are also some revenue changes over in fiscal 21 as well that we do count. Finally, there's some non-general fund revenues and transfers that I'm tracking. And at the end, you'll see on line 172, this was the base for this committee's agencies coming in from the February forecast. And then the $45.56 million in increased expenditures. And then we net that out against the revenue changes that I discussed, the largest, of course, which is the Senate carry forward reduction. which brings the total spending for fiscal year 22-23 to this $999,755,000, bringing forward the spending reductions from fiscal year 21, that reduces this net spending for those 3 years to $994,663,000. So that's a quick walkthrough. I'm available for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Roberts. And now, Mr. Gehring. Wait a second. Representative Nash, you have your hand up. You have questions for Ms. Roberts or?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Roberts, could you walk through the cosmetology number again? You were scrolling awfully fast and I wanted to make sure I knew that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nash. You'll see on line 126, and I'm sorry, I did go through all of those small agencies pretty quickly. For the Cosmetology Examiners Board, the general fund increase is $139,000 for the biennium.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Roberts, my apologies for my voice. I've got really bad allergies today. Could you walk through what that's for? Did they detail that in the governor's request?
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair and members, there is some discussion of it in each individual change item in the governor's budget documents. I also have some additional information from MMB that I can put together. MMB calculated these individual operating adjustments for the agencies, and they used a standard methodology that looked at I believe they took a snapshot of the current staffing costs in the human resources payroll system, and then looked at known insurance costs, some known changes such as known retirements and those kinds of changes, applied a 1% increase each year to cover payroll increase costs, and then also included known rent changes and known changes from minute services.
Representative Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Roberts, if you could get that to me, I would appreciate that. I know I've got it, but you've always proven to be faster on the draw than I am on finding those things. I'm mostly interested in their rent and common area maintenance and some of the expenditures they have on their physical facilities and payroll.
Ms. Roberts will take note of that. Representative Nash, are you done then?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Quam, I see you have your hand up. Is it of Ms. Roberts or?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Clarification on the legislative auditor adjustment. Was there any justification given for that adjustment, or is it just they did the job?
Ms. Roberts, Representative Quam, do you mean that the keeping the budget amount that they're transferring over the policy, or the transferring over the single audit to the state auditor, or actually to the Department of Administration, was going to contract that out possibly to the state auditor, and then they're going to keep the money. Mr. Nobles, I don't know if he's on this morning, but Mr. Nobles, if wanted to be able to use those dollars to keep his staff that he currently has, so he could do other program audits and things that we request of him. Otherwise, he would have had to take a cut staff in his office. As he lost the single audit function. Does that answer your question, Representative Quam?
Mr. Chair, I mainly wanted it brought up the fact that that single audit and that activity, federal funds come in, the state and agencies are supposed to have controls and audit it, and there's part of those federal funds cover administration, which is the internal auditing. None of those funds were ever utilized to compensate the legislative auditor. However, that function was still taking out of the bandwidth of which we as a legislature funded the auditor. And, I was not pleased that the governor thought that there should be an adjustment. And I'm glad that people in the legislature respect the need and independence of the legislative auditor. And I just wanted to make sure it was clear.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Any further questions of Ms. Roberts? If not, we will go to Mr. Gehring. And Mr. Gehring, if you want to walk through the rest of the bill.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Roberts walked through Article 1 of the DE2 amendment, and I'm going to walk through the policy articles, which are Articles 2 through 6. The policy articles include a general state government policy article, as well as elections, campaign finance, information technology, and local government. And instead of sharing my screen with the actual DE amendment, because there are so many pages, I'm just going to share the screen that shows the policy tracking sheet that I have. But I'll give some page references as we go through. So I'm happy to take questions wherever you have them. First, we'll start with Article 2, since Article 1 has already been covered. Article 2 starts on page 14 of the DE2 amendment. Starts with a number of small sections. Section 1 on page 14 designates a state fire museum. Section 2 is language that authorizes the legislative reference library to receive state documents at no cost. Section 3 clarifies the scope of jurisdiction for the Legislative Coordinating Commission. Sections 4 through 9 provide a number of administrative and technical updates to the scope of work of the Office of the Legislative Auditor. This is the bill that was heard previously in committee that provides authority for the OLA to conduct special reviews, modifies their staffing structure, and some other items. Section 10 is the first section in a series of sections in this article that provide changes to the laws governing the work of the Department of Administration. This is the bill that you heard in committee previously, Representative Carlson's bill, that includes things like authorizing the handler of a state canine to take ownership of the canine once it's retired from state service, shifting the Office of the Office of Collaboration and Dispute Resolution, codifying in statute the Office of Enterprise Sustainability, some changes and clarifications to the SHPO, which is the State Historic Preservation Office, and then a number of sort of administrative and technical changes related to the central motor pool. Section 12, which you find on page 20 of the DE2 amendment, is the language that codifies the executive order related to the state-tribal relationships. This was Representative Becker Finn's bill that the committee heard recently. Section 13, which is on page 24 of the DE2, is the first in a series of policy recommendations that came from the governor's office. This is the policy language that actually moves the single source audit responsibility from the legislative auditor to MMB. You heard the discussion just a minute ago about the way that funding is structured. This is the policy language that goes along with that. Section 14, which is also on page 24 of the DE2, provides a set date for the release of the November budget forecast, which would be required to be released by December 6th of each year. Section 15, also on page 24, gets rid of some obsolete language related to the transfer of surplus funds to the Clean Water Fund at the end of a biennium, and that's because that amount of funds has now been transferred, and so the language is no longer necessary in that section. Section 16, which is on page 25 of the DE2, authorizes the Commissioner of Management and Budget to establish a virtual payments program. This was a governor's policy recommendation. Section 18, on page 26 of the DE2, establishes a capital flag program to provide U.S. and Minnesota state flags to families of public safety officers killed in the line of duty, as well as to families of military members who died while in active service. Section 25, this is on page 32 of the DE2, is a governor's policy recommendation that provides that grant funds that are appropriated by law, that a portion of grant funds appropriated by law may be used for administrative costs of it for the grant by the agency that's administering it. The amount of the administrative allowance is 5% for legislatively named and formula grants and 10% for competitive grants. Section 26, which is on page 33 of the DE2, provides that it's an option rather than a mandate for MMB to provide an option for a high deductible health plan to certain employee groups. On page 39 of the DE2 is the first in a couple of sections that relate to background checks for individuals who have access to federal tax information. The substantive section there is section 40. On page 39 of the DE2, section 39, you'll see is also governor's recommendation. This expands the eligibility for organizations to participate in the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Grants Program. Section 41 on page 41 of the DE2 allows members of the Gambling Control Board to remain in their position until a successor is appointed. This is Representative Hewitt's bill as introduced. And then moving forward, section 44, which is also on page 44 of the DE2, is the working group to make recommendations for creating a racial equity impact note for proposed legislation. This was the bill that you heard from Representative Vang just a couple weeks ago. A note here that this section is just the working group and not the substantive requirement of the racial equity impact note in this amendment. Section 45, which is also on page 44 of the DE2, provides language providing for sensory accessibility accommodations grants, and there's funding that Ms. Roberts mentioned in Article 1 to go along with this. And then the repealers, Section 47 at the end of Article 1 include repealers that go back with some previous policy sections, as well as the repeal of the employee gain sharing program and the requirement that certain interagency agreements and transfers be reported to the legislature. And Mr. Chair, that's the end of the general policy article, Article 2. So I'll move on to Article 3, which is the Elections and Administration article. Section 1 of that article, which is on page 45, provides a permanent statutory appropriation for Help America Vote Act funds. As you know, these are funds that currently are, when they're provided to the state by the federal government, require a subsequent legislative appropriation to be used. This would get rid of the need for a further legislative appropriation. There's a whole slew of sections in Article 3 that come from Representative Nelson's House File 1160. This is the Secretary of State's technical and administrative bill. Across these sections, you'll see changes to the time when absentee ballots may be counted, elimination of the three-person limit for assisting a voter on Election Day, extension of the availability of previously appropriated HABA funds. So this is not the permanent statutory appropriation. This is extending the funds that have been appropriated in the last couple of years. You also see changes in the way that post-election reviews are conducted, changes in to conform to recent litigation related to vacancies and nomination for federal office, process for recounts of constitutional amendments, and some other sort of miscellaneous changes throughout this article. Next, you'll see section 3 of this article is the first in a couple of sections that relate to voter intimidation. This is language that comes from Representative Greenman's House File 9. Section 3 is authorizing the Attorney General to enforce the new laws, but the substantive new voter intimidation sections are sections 80 and 81, which come quite a bit later in the article. Section 4, again, is the first of a few sections that establish a process of automatic voter registration. This is on page 54 of the DE2 amendment. Section 5, which is on page 47 of the DE2, requires post-secondary institutions that enroll students that accept state financial aid to prepare a current list of students enrolled in campus housing, as well as within 10 miles of campus. This list is used for same-day voter registration for proof of residence. Section 6 on page 47 of the DE2 is the first in a series of sections that restore voting rights to individuals following any period of incarceration after conviction for a felony. Section 20, which is on page, which follows the section, is the first of two sections that come from Representative Long's bill that authorized political parties to enforce the use of their name on the ballot through the errors and omissions petition process. Section 28 which you'll see on page 63 of the DE2, requires the Secretary of State to prepare voting instructions in languages other than English for in-person absentee voters. There's an appropriation that goes along with this that Ms. Roberts mentioned in Article 1. Section 36 on page 68 of the DE2 authorizes a candidate to request that their residential address be protected from public disclosure if they have a reasonable fear for their own safety or the safety of their family. Sections 42 and 43 on page 72 of the DE2 authorize school boards to grant academic credit to students serving as trainee election judges, and also, when possible, to recruit bilingual high school students to serve as trainee judges. And there's language provided, or an appropriation provided in Article 1 to support recruitment of these types of trainee judges. Section 75 on page 90 of the DE2 is new language that authorizes the Secretary of State to distribute HAVA funds as grants to political subdivisions for certain purposes, which are authorized under the Help America Vote Act, the federal law. And then lastly, in the Elections Administration article, I've lost my page. There we go. Lastly, section 92, which is on page 101 of the DE2, is language from Representative Dabney's House File 23 that directs the Secretary of State to adopt an administrative rule that recognizes a medical bill as proof of residence for purposes of Election Day registration. And that's the end of the Elections and Administration article. Article 4 is campaign finance. Starting on page 123 of the DE2, you'll see section 1 running through section 9, and then throughout this article, as Representative Freiberg's House File 396, which transfers oversight of certain campaign finance reporting requirements for candidates located in Hennepin County. On page 103, section 6 of this article, it comes from Representative Greenman's bill. This expands the definition of expressly advocating. This is a term that's used to decide whether a campaign advertisement or other document is required to be reported to the Campaign Finance Board. Section 10 on page 104 of the DE2 is Representative Lucero's language that authorizes certain security related expenses to be reported as a non-campaign disbursement when paid for by campaign funds. On page 107 of the DE2 is the first of a series of sections that come from House File 1803. This is Representative Herr's bill that provides sort of miscellaneous and technical updates to campaign finance board laws, including the way that statements of economic interest are reported. Section 31 on page 121 of the DE2 is language that requires independent expenditure disclaimers to list the top three contributors responsible for funding that disclaimer. And then lastly, in this article, sections 32 and 33, which is on a page 122 of the DE2, eliminates, it sort of restructures and reorganizes the requirement related to the disclaimer that's required to be reported on electronic communications. So these are things like online banner ads and other types of advertisements like that. And that's the end of Article 4, with the campaign finance article. So next is Article 5. Which is a relatively short article related to information technology policy. Section 1 on page 125 establishes the Legislative Commission on Cybersecurity. This is Representative Bonner's Health File 66. And then most of the rest of this article is also Representative Bonner's bill, House File 609, that provides a number of changes related to the structure and oversight of the Office of Minute Services, including changing the name of Minute from the Office of Minute Services to the Department of Information Technology Services. These sections also reorganize the existing Technology Advisory Committee to instead call it the Technology Advisory Council, and expands its membership to more closely mirror the current Blue Ribbon Council on IT Services. And I would say otherwise, in the series of sections, you see some recommendations that come from that Blue Ribbon Commission, as well as some recommendations made by the Office of the Legislative Auditor. And then Article 6, which follows, is Chelsea Griffin's area. She's our local government analyst, and I believe she's on the call to do the walkthrough of that article.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Chelsea Griffin, and I'm with House Research. So I'll be walking you through the provisions of Article 6 in the DE. Sections 1 through 6 update various provisions of the open meeting law to reflect modern technology that's used for remote meetings of public bodies. Section 7, beginning on page 143, authorizes cities of the first class to enact an ordinance that requires a portion of land to be dedicated to the public or to impose a dedication fee for such purposes on new construction. The cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul already have special legislation like this, and so sections 21 through 22 amend those special laws to be notwithstanding the new language in Section 7. Section 8 authorizes the Seaway Port Authority of Duluth to create a nonprofit corporation under Chapter 317A. Section 9 and 10, which you can find on page 144, authorizes towns or any political subdivision of the state with statutory sewer ownership or operational responsibilities to establish inflow and infiltration prevention programs. Section 11, also found on page 144, increases the threshold for certain county contracts to $750,000. Section 12 on page 144 permits a city or town to adopt an ordinance requiring hotels in the municipality to have a municipal hotel license, which requires compliance with state and local laws. Section 13 on page 145 is a conforming change in reaction to the repealer, which is section 23 on page 152. The repealer repeals the compensation limit for political subdivision employees. And finally, sections 14 through 20, which are on pages 145 through 151, update various special law provisions that authorize the Duluth Entertainment and Convention Center. These provisions generally update language, and it increases the threshold for required competitive bidding or required deck authorizations of contracts to more than $50,000. Mr. Chair, that concludes Article 6 and the bill.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. Members, any questions? If not any questions, we have some people on the line here to give testimony. I guess I've got a list here. I don't know if this is the way we want to go, but Commissioner Alice Roberts Davis, you want to testify? It doesn't sound like she's there. The next person I have is Julie Byerly. Not hearing from her. Commissioner Doty from the Department of Revenue.
Good morning, Chair Nelson.
Good morning, Commissioner Doty.
Well, Chair Nelson, members of the committee, thank you for having me today. For the record, my name is Robert Doty, Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. We appreciate the committee's efforts in House File 1952 to support the governor's recommendations, and we thank you for your support of the department. As you know, the IRS in Minnesota opened the 2021 individual income tax filing season on February 12th. As previously announced, the Department of Revenue is extending a grace period to Minnesota taxpayers who will have the opportunity to file and pay their taxes penalty and interest free until May 17th. As of Monday, the department had received 1.5 million individual income tax returns, processed nearly 1.4 million returns, and sent out about 971,000 refunds. The governor's recommendations reflected the funding necessary to sustain our current operations and our agency commitment to identifying efficiencies to manage ongoing cost growth related to compensation, IT services, and other agency operating expenses. As changes are made to the tax code, revenue will need increased funds to administer these changes to our current service levels. Any reduction from the governor's recommendations will begin to affect the delivery of programs and services. That could translate to longer wait times for Minnesotans calling with questions or longer wait times for refunds to be processed. As this bill moves forward, we hope the committee will provide the full operating adjustment Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan proposed in their budget. I would like to thank you for providing the governor's recommendation for grants for taxpayer assistance. We are concerned about the lack of direct appropriation language for capacity building. Providing an appropriation for capacity building would enable the department to provide resources and tools for new and expanding VITA sites across the state. To close, I would like to thank you for your support of the Department of Revenue and for including compliance provisions to align Minnesota to IRS Publication 1075. We are eager to serve Minnesota taxpayers as efficiently and as effectively as possible. To do so, we need your help to secure the appropriate level of financial resources that will enable the department to continue to meet the needs of Minnesota's taxpayers. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for letting me speak to you today, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner Doty. The next person I have on the list is Andrea Thurston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the House Government and Finance Committee. I am Andrea Thurston. I'm with the Center for Economic Inclusion, and I want to thank members of this committee for including the formation of a working group to design the racial equity impact notes, methodology, and process. Only the full economic participation of Black, Indigenous, Latinx, and Asian people will unlock our region and state's potential for growth. To this end, I want to encourage this committee to include direction that ensures enactment of the racial equity impact notes begins next session. There is adequate time for the working group to provide recommendations and for the LPO to review these and put in place an execution plan for delivery of these notes next session. Racial equity impact notes are critical to unlocking our state's potential as it ensures key data and analysis be part of the decision-making process. I want to remind members of this committee of my colleague Brett Grant's testimony recently, in which he noted that many racially and economically inequitable results are produced inadvertently through processes and choices that may not even explicitly address race, may appear race neutral, or may even be offered to address racial disparities because we do not have a process in place to assess the intended results. As our demographic shifts, our disparities persist. With federal dollars coming into the state at unprecedented levels, we must work in a timely manner to ensure data-informed decision-making that helps us better assess future impact of legislation and spending. The Center for Economic Inclusion, Voices for Racial Justice, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota, and the Racial Equity and Joy Coalition all recommend instituting racial equity impact notes as a means for ensuring responsive policies and investments. We can't afford to wait on the implementation of racial equity impact notes. This can serve as a vital tool for preventing institutional racism and for identifying new options to remedy longstanding inequities and accelerate inclusive growth, prosperity, and resilience. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Thurston. Members, I see Representative Koznick, you have your hand up. Representative New, I saw your hand up. Did you take it down? Representative New?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did. My question was actually for Commissioner Doty.
Okay, well, go ahead and ask your question, Mr. Representative, or Commissioner Doty is still here.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Doty, I'm just wondering if you can let us know, with the reduction from the governor's recommendations, is that going to lead to any layoffs at the department?
Commissioner Doty.
Is he still here? I don't see him, actually.
I thought he was going to stay for questions.
Okay. Looks like we lost him.
Looks like we lost him, yes. We'll get that question to him, and maybe he'll be here tomorrow to answer questions also. Representative Koznick, you had a question.
I was curious in Commissioner Doty's answer as well to the same question.
Okay, well, we'll get that to him. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wanting to ask a question of Ms. Thurston.
Go ahead, Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Furston, and I heard you talk about several minority groups. I did not hear the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. Was that an oversight by yourself or what?
Ms. Furston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nash. I know that when we talk about the working group, there are a number of groups that are being explored and mentioned, and I believe CAIL, Council of Asian and Pacific Americans is one of them. We'd have to double check that, but that's certainly a key partner that we can look at in terms of the working group.
And Mr. Chair, Ms. Furston broke up that they are or are not included.
Ms. Furston, I believe you said they are.
I believe, but I'd have to double check the language in the working group. But if they are not, that is something that we could certainly look at. And there are some spots that are to be appointed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Nash, that working group comes out of Representative Vang's bill that we put forward, and we're doing the working group so that they can come forward with recommendations to us and to the governor of changes we need to make. And then hopefully next year we'll be able to make those changes and institute the racial impact notes across the board for all the minority groups. Members, any other questions? Seeing none, members, that gets us through our walkthrough, and I've got a note here that Ms. Roberts Davis is going to testify tomorrow. We may have more testifiers tomorrow. Amendments to the DE amendment are due 5 o'clock today, and so that we can then we'll get through the testimony and start working on tomorrow on the markup of the bill. We've got tomorrow evening scheduled to finish markup of the bill. And if we finish that, we can pass the bill out or we can come back. We'll be back here Thursday morning, again, doing the markup of the bill and passing the bill out of here to Ways and Means. By Thursday, the latest of this, at 10 o'clock, this bill will be passed out to Ways and Means. We also tomorrow morning have a presentation from the Majority Leader Ryan Winkler and Barb Julich, the Controller of the House Budget, to explain the changes of the House budget and moving forward. And that's part of the bill, but they'll explain what those are. That's going to be taken up in rules today. Members, any further questions? If not, members, have a good day. You know what's ahead of us for the next couple of days. This is the hard work of this committee, and we will hopefully get this bill passed out into Ways and Means and then go on from there. So members, with that, there are no further questions or comments. We are adjourned for today. Thank you, members.